This episode of the Beauté Industry Podcast was brought to you by Beauty Events Hub, a hub for searching and advertising events in the beauty industry. Hello and welcome to today's episode of the Beauté Industry Podcast, your online support community for the professional beauty industry, connecting you with educational pieces, innovative industry products and inspiration from industry experts. I am your host, founding director of Beauté Industry, Tamara Shaw. After much request throughout today's episode, we are exploring the world of injectables. Our guest is Amy Wright, who you may know as Cosmetic Nurse Amy if you already follow her on Instagram. Amy is a registered nurse whose career is one anyone can resonate with, but in particular, our aspiring nurses and injectors in the audience. Amy started her injecting career in Perth in a private clinic in a traineeship studying under a nurse practitioner who had come from England to open her own clinic in Australia. From here, Amy travelled around injecting in various parts of the country, including Melbourne, Queensland, and Sydney, to finally settle back into Melbourne, where her family is, and open her own practice in Eltham, Victoria, aptly named Eltham Cosmetic Clinic. Amy stepped out of the clinic in the middle of a busy day of injecting to shed light and insight into her work, dedication, and the passion it takes to come out the other end of a nursing degree and become an injector. You may hear some small bells during this recording as my little cat Tiger Lily was being very needy the day we recorded this episode, so apologies in advance if that distracts from the conversation. Talking injectables from Eltham Cosmetic Clinic, today we welcome Amy Wright. So thank you, Amy, for joining me on the podcast today.
Thank you for having me.
My absolute pleasure. You've been running around this morning doing lots of treatments, so I really appreciate your time. It's really beautiful that you could join me.
Oh, you're most welcome. Thanks for having
me. Pleasure. So let's start at the beginning of your career. Mm-hmm. When did you decide you wanted to be a nurse?
I kind of always had a carer sort of background, I suppose. I think nursing is one of those vocations that you kind of dream about even as a little child. I was one of those little kids that had all my teddies seemed to have broken arms and legs and wound dressings, and everybody was sick and everybody needed help, you know, in all my little games as a little kid. So I think you kind of gravitate towards things like that sort of naturally. I got into uni eventually. I got a second or a third chance or third round offer, they call it, I think, when you're not I just was not straight in. That's, you know, that was the main thing. I didn't get the high enough score to get straight in, so did what I do best and wrote a really convincing letter and
fantastic,
sent 10 or 11 of those off, and here I am. But I think pretty much always if I couldn't be a dancer, I wanted to be a ballerina, which that didn't work out either. So here I am.
Amazing. Well, I wanted to be a ballerina and that didn't work out for me either. So here I am.
Exactly. Well, I think if you're not intensively training when you're about 4, I think it's not going to happen for you, unfortunately.
So. Yeah, correct. And we ended up in the beauty industry. How funny is that?
Yeah.
So when did you realise that you wanted to become an injector from the kind of nursing arm and branch that you were already in?
I must have been just really, really just even starting uni, I became interested in just injectable procedures, because way back then, that's probably nearly 11 years ago, injecting wasn't cool. It was really, really not that well known. It wasn't as commonplace for people to just be having this or that done. And I really did seek it out because I thought it was really interesting, because I wanted a few little things done here and there to my own face. And I just kind of stumbled upon it, got really interested in it. I saved up all my pennies and I had some treatments done at a fairly young age. I just always thought it was a doctor thing. It never really occurred to me that nurses can do that too. And then halfway through my nursing degree, I started to spend some time with a friend of mine who was in plastics, and he said, you know, we can teach nurses to do these things. And I'm like, no way. Oh my God. Imagine coming along and putting a needle in someone's face and causing alterations and being responsible for them myself. No way. I saw a lot of videos, and there's a lot on YouTube that you can, a lot of different techniques and demonstrations. And I just used to watch tons of those. And, you know, obviously with him overseeing me, I was able to sort of get a bit of exposure to it. And it's just such a contrast to nursing in hospitals, you know, so which is, you know, angel's work, as I say, women who are men and women who are doing that full time. I absolutely take my hat off to them. I lasted, I think, 2 years in the hospital system on the wards. And I got to say, that is hard yakka. There are women there who've been full time doing that job for 20 years and I lasted like two. And I do miss it from time to time. I really do miss those really special moments you have with, you know, people who are truly unwell. But I sort of got wind that, you know, with the right sort of, if I could really, really find someone who would take me on and teach me, that that injecting full time would be just so much fun. How could you even call that a job? Like, that's not even work. That's just like, imagine getting to do a super cool hobby every single day, you know.
Exactly. So, yeah,
I just found my way.
So cool. And I love how you spoke about there, 11 years ago when you first started injecting, the landscape of the beauty industry and of the injecting industry is so different to what it looks like now.
It's completely evolved. And we obviously, social media has a huge role to play in that. And obviously the likes of the Kardashians making it, love them or hate them, they've had a huge impact on just the accessibility of it. To just show people that, you know, young women can do this too, and that, you know, little things that you don't love about your face can be modified in a, you know, a fairly temporary way. And it's just not, I liked it when nobody knew about it. It wasn't cool back then. It was quite extreme. It was very, very expensive, and it was really for the rich and famous. Like, it was, I mean, we're going back to the days when a basic Botox treatment was like $800, you know, so, or $900 or more. And it's like, wow, God, you can less than half of that these days. But I feel very fortunate that I don't know why, but I just always gravitated towards it and thought it was the coolest thing ever. And then by the time it became cool, I was quite experienced. So it was like, well, hey, I'm over here and I'm actually not bad at this now that everybody thinks it's cool. so I really got to, and, you know, speaking of social media and the Kardashians, I mean, that Kylie Jenner 2016 lip transformation thing,
yes,
love it or hate it, revolutionized, I guess, the industry. And it fortunately coincided with the same year I opened my own place. And basically Kylie Jenner and those lips paid my rent for a year. Okay. So thanks, Kyle.
I love that.
I'll have to thank her for that.
Yeah, I think every injector has an eternal debt to Kylie Jenner, don't they?
Yeah, love her or hate her.
When I very first started realizing the world of injectables was probably about 2013. I just got back from the cruise ships, and a family friend of mine opened a celebrity clinic, and it was beautiful. But the thing was, is that the celebrities could park out the back and then slip in and out and have their treatments. And it's just so much evolved now that we've got injectables in shopping centers, exactly, for example. Right. So it's not scary anymore, and we're kind of not really hiding it.
Exactly right. Yeah. It's so much more acceptable. It's so commonplace now, and it's becoming like, I mean, everybody got their ears pierced when they reached a certain age. It was really common to get your belly button pierced. And then I remember when I was about 18 or 19, it was really weird if you didn't have your belly button pierced. It's like, where have you been? When are you going to hurry up and go get your thing that we all just do? And now it's like, what do you mean you've never had your lips done? Never? Like, what are you doing? Like, it seems to have become such a like a milestone part of the culture, really. Now, isn't it? Massively.
Yeah. For sure. And so talk to me about the study to become an injector, because there's quite a few years of nursing that you have to do, and then there's further studying from there. Yep. What does that look like?
Well, you do your three – I get asked this question a lot on Instagram in DM, so I'm going to repost this, and I'm really happy that I get a chance to answer it in a bit more detail for the multitude of inquiries I get about how I got into it and how I got to sort of where I've ended up today in my career. But everybody has to do a Bachelor of Health Science Nursing. So I get a lot of DMs about girls going, can't I just go to TAFE for a year? Can't I just do 6 months? Can't I do something online? No, the answer is no. We're quite firm on that. And even enrolled nursing, so in some states it's called EN, in some states we call it Division 2 nursing. It's just like a different sort of, I guess, classification of nurses who have a different set of responsibilities and things that they are and aren't allowed to do. So you've got to be a Division 1 registered nurse. I do believe now, and you might have some more understanding on this too, that there are ENs or Div 2s in some clinics that if they're medication endorsed, which is an additional certificate, they can actually do injectables while supervised. I'm not sure how.
Yes, I've heard that. I think it might be a 3-year supervision or something.
Yes. So, so Div 2, technically I think Div 2 is 18 months at TAFE. And then your additional, because Div 2 nurses in a hospital, they can do lots and lots of things, but they can't give medications and they can't sort of monitor IV drips and stuff. That's a Division 1 nurse's role. So when it comes to injecting, that's a medication. That's a Schedule 4 medication that we need prescription for and that you need to be drug endorsed. My understanding is in some places they're allowed to with doctor supervision. As an established injector giving advice to somebody who's keen on pursuing it as a career, I would probably just try and bypass that and just go straight to uni and do your time in the trenches, as I always say. Do your Div 1 because, as you'd know, and as a lot of people know, there's a lot of heat on the industry in terms of governing bodies and regulations, and the medical board are really cracking down on renegade nurse injectors doing the wrong thing and certain practices just not following policy and just doing the wrong thing and causing really negative outcomes and giving us all a bad name. So I think it's going to get harder and harder for Div 2s to, first of all, to do that legally. Second of all, if you're looking at getting into the industry and becoming an injector, you want that career for life. You don't want to invest all this time in your own education and development and further study and HEX and all the stuff that goes into building this career, because if they turn around and change the laws, you're going to have to go back and study anyway and finish your Div 1. And the other thing is to gain employment as an inexperienced green injector is actually quite challenging. Every place you'll find is like, no, we just want people with experience. But it's like, where do you get that experience? Who's willing to give us a go? We've got our certificate, we're qualified, but who's going to let a brand new injector just start injecting within their practice? So to say, hey, I'm a Div 2, so I can't inject at all, and you have to pay someone to supervise me and pay me, can I come in and work for you? Like, it's going to be even harder to find employment, because, having a practice of my own, I can't justify paying for supervision and paying for a Div. Like, why wouldn't you just pay an RN or a doctor? Absolutely. You know, it's probably better. So, if you can just do, I always say to people, uni's overwhelming. People think, oh my God, 3 years, I'm going to be 3 years older. And I always say to people who say that, it doesn't matter how old you are. If you're 55 or 60, thinking, oh, I really wouldn't mind being a nurse and, becoming an injector, you're going to be 3 years older anyway. And in 3 years, you're going to be 3 years older than you were today, but without the career of your dreams. So start now, get into it. Life experience makes you a better nurse anyway. Sorry, I've digressed, but to get into your question. So do your Bachelor of Health if you can, Bachelor of Health Science. Div 2s can go back to uni and do a little bit extra to make themselves a Div 1. And then technically, and this is alarming, and I'm sure it'll change, one day, but technically Botox, or I shouldn't say that, anti-wrinkle injections and dermal fillers and injectable medications, because they fall under the Schedule 4 category, they're prescription only. So just like if I was nursing you in a hospital, you were my patient, you're lying in the bed, I can come in and say, hi, I'm looking after you today, the doctor's ordered this and this medication, and I can actually give that to you. But if the doctor hasn't written a medication order or a script, I can't give it to you. Nurses can't write scripts, only doctors. So in every practice everywhere in Australia, a drug can only be given to a patient if a doctor has seen that person, give them a consult and written a script for that particular medication. So hence us needing to have doctors around all the time, us nurses to do this, to do this on our own. So
amazing.
So when it comes to getting qualified and you know, getting signed off on it, injecting, technically, as soon as you've become a Div 1, you can inject all Schedule 4 medications, and that includes anti-wrinkle injections, toxins, and fillers. So, you know, really, you don't officially, legally, formally have to have really any other training, which is really scary. So, the other thing is that same goes if you're a doctor. So if, say, I was a doctor, I could literally call up a drug company that manufactures fillers and anti-wrinkle toxins and say, hey, I'm this super cool doctor. I've got a medical degree. Can you come on down and teach me how to inject this stuff? They'd literally pop in. They'd give you a two-hour workshop. You'd have a few goes on some willing victims, and you'd get a certificate to say that you're qualified to inject this stuff. And that's a two-hour workshop, having maybe two or three goes at it. And that's
it's bananas.
So hence all of the dissolving I do, hence all of the all of the things going wrong and all that kind of stuff, because I'm not doctor bashing at all. Nurses do it too, but technically, if you really want to look at it, anyone can go do their 2-hour little thingy, get their little certificate on the wall, and off they go. So when you're asking what formal qualifications you need, the actual answer would be to be an RN who's registered, or to be a doctor, really. But we know from being in the industry and for, you know, general, you know, being sensible in general, that you want to be injected by somebody who's been trained or done the course. So there's a few amazing courses out there. I've actually just been very fortunate to get a job as a trainer for the Australasian Academy of Cosmetic Dermal Science, the AACDS. So they do some pretty amazing, very comprehensive postgraduate certificate fours and diplomas for nurses who want to specialize in cosmetic nursing. You can also go to the CPD Institute, and they offer more more specific, much shorter courses tailored to specific specific sort of treatments. So you can go to the CPD Institute and pay to do like a week workshop, and that's just specifically focusing on, say, lip filler, and you can go and attain those additional qualifications specific to our industry that way. So you can commit to like an advanced diploma or certificate. That's a 1-year course, and that's quite comprehensive. That's going to take you in through mole removal, advanced dermal therapies, using lasers, even assisting plastic surgeons. The role as a cosmetic nurse is actually very varied. So those courses are really good for making you a really great all-rounder. I always say to people asking me this question, do you want to be an injector like me, excuse me, or do you want to be a cosmetic nurse? Because cosmetic nurses are doing those really, really deep chemical peels that are like, you know, basically you're treating the wound like it's a third degree burn. They're really, really invasive. They're quite risky. You've got to be a nurse or a doctor to be doing them. They're really fantastic, but they're in, you know, those sort of higher end clinics. They can be doing like I said, mole removal and a full spectrum laser treatments and, or even some RNs have roles, you know, alongside plastic surgeons, kind of acting as their right hand, doing their admissions, their discharges, their wound dressings, their follow-up, and also scrubbing in on their plastic surgeries that they perform. That's another really common role that RNs move into when they've come from a surgical or peri-op background. So a nurse who's been working in recovery or anesthetics in a ward, in a hospital environment, wants to get into cosmetics. Just a heads up, ladies, the surgeons love it. So if you've got any operating experience or any peri-op experience at all, you do really well in an environment like that, because you're familiar with that sort of department, and also your you know, your way around some surgeons in that way and the way they sort of operate. So so that's another sort of avenue. But I was really fortunate to sort of, I actually enrolled in the AACDS that's in Perth, because they've got a Perth campus. And about 2 or 3 months into the advanced diploma of cosmetic nursing, I was very lucky to have one of my my desperate attempts to gain employment in the industry was taken up by a wonderful woman in Perth, and she took me on as like a trainee, and it was like a 12-month intensive sort of traineeship just under her, just working really closely with her every day for a year, and basically getting chucked in the deep end. So I learned everything, you know, that's where I started. But nowadays, to find somebody who's literally going to take on a completely green person who's never injected at all, who hasn't done any of the additional certificates that I mentioned before, and who hasn't gone to the academy, I'm sure it's out there. And if you wanted as much as I did, you'll send 10, 15, 20, 30 resumes and emails. You'll follow up, you'll call, you'll rock up to the clinic, you'll do all those things that that we do when we're chasing something we really want. And in the meantime, you can, you can just keep watching YouTube, keep understanding the space, keep doing those little courses if you can. But it can be, yeah, to get a start for a brand newbie, it can be pretty challenging, I have to admit.
Can be difficult. Yeah. And as you said there, the industry is now becoming more and more regulated. And I think definitely as we move into the kind of 2020s, I think the cosmetic industry is definitely going to be looked upon more specifically. And I love how you were saying there that, you know, a doctor can go and do a 2-hour injecting course with a brand and then come out and be injecting the next day. Because one of my friends actually said to me, my dentist has started offering anti-wrinkle and filler. Should I go there? And I said, well, look, you know, would you go to a doctor for your teeth? No. Exactly. So would you go to a dentist for your injectables? Probably not.
Thank you very much. I do think, I mean, there's always some, you know, the niche sort of people out there who are kind of, who are good at wearing a few different hats and like, you know, they have actually really honed their skills before they start offering it to their dental patients. But it's exactly the same thing because they've got prescribing rights because they're dentists. They can prescribe medication and, you know, our dermal fillers and our toxins are S4s. So they're like, cool, I'm just going to order in some of this cool, weird stuff and I'm going to do
off I go.
But yeah, there's been quite a lot of mixed reviews on the things I have to say. I do find those ads on Facebook for pop in and get your teeth whitened and I'll also do some lip filler for you. I find it a little bit disturbing. And I had a bit of a record month. I think it was October last year. I had a record month of the number of hyaluronic procedures, which is the drug we use to dissolve filler, specifically from a dental practice. So it must have been a special that was run, and then a month went on and everybody had all these crazy results, and then they were like, right, let's go and get this fixed. And you know, doing that can end up, you think you're saving, you know, $20 or $50 or $100 here or there, but the hyaluronic procedure isn't a cheap one either. That can cost hundreds, plus it's really worth it. Having it dissolved can be really uncomfortable. It can really, really hurt, and it causes a lot of swelling. So not a nice experience. I say just pay to get it done properly the first time.
Save yourself the trouble. Agree. Yeah. And talk to me about what it was like treating your first ever patient. How nervous were you?
Oh,
what kind of job did you do?
Oh, God bless my little self. I just, I mean, that I'm sure everyone says this about their first day on their job, but fake it until you make it. I mean, because I was so interested in the industry for so long before I was actually injecting myself, I think I had quite a lot of knowledge, but knowledge is one thing, and talking about it and reading about it, knowing a lot about it, is very different to holding a needle in your hand and physically, you know, injecting it into someone's face. So that day was I was just really, really thrown in the deep end, and at the time I really hated it. I was just anxious all the time. I would just, you know, because as you know, with these injectable treatments, we do them and things like, okay on the day, but it takes 2 weeks for these toxins to kick in. So I'd be like, holy crap, I hope when they come back in 2 weeks, everything's okay. And it's really, really stressful, but you just have to stick to your protocols. Keep it so, so simple. Stick to the basics, do what you've been taught to the letter and don't stray outside of that. And I mean, I was very lucky in that my boss, the nurse practitioner who trained me, was she had these set protocols, and she's like, if you inject this way, the way I'm showing you, you can't go wrong. The only thing that can go wrong is all the other things that can go wrong, but not your injecting. So I just really tried to play by the rules, as I still do. I'm such a square for that, but I was trembling. I couldn't stop my hand shaking, and I was just like, maybe just close your eyes. People find it nicer for their treatment when they just close their eyes. And I'm like, it's because I don't want you to see my hand shaking.
Yeah.
But it went okay. But yeah, it was, I can see why a lot of injectors get into the wines. It's a pretty stressful job sometimes. Yeah.
Absolutely. And so in between your first treatment and now, obviously you've had lots of experience with patients and working for other businesses. What made you want to open your own business, the cosmetic clinic?
I was pretty lucky to sort of cruise around and work in quite a variety of clinics, because I was sort of always moving interstate. And you know, once you've got a few years of experience, you can then be a contractor. So you can kind of come and go in clinics and I was lucky to sort of be there in the beginning when a few were just opening. So they were startups. And so I sort of watched as these women kind of battled out opening their own clinics and kind of what they went through. And at the time I was like, stuff that, I've got zero interest in having my own clinic. That's that's appalling. I never ever want to go through what you're going through. But I think I just saw working in so many different places, like I said, you can just, there's just so many different ways of doing it. Like so many, like any business, like you can go into 15 different cafes and every single one of them is different. The vibe is different. The emphasis is different. The ethos and the culture of the staff is completely different. And you can basically cruise around and go, cool, this vibe suits that personality type and that demographic and they do really well with them. And then you cruise over there and you're like, this is a different socioeconomic status in this area, or, you know, all the injectors are really young and gorgeous. It attracts other really young people, which is great, and they'll be very busy doing things like lips. But then you're not going to sort of get your older ladies having the more sort of anti-aging treatments. And it was kind of cool to just cruise around and just see how all these different people did it. And you can kind of pick and choose your style over the time and how you, what your preference is and your sort of, I don't know, yeah, your style, I guess. And I was working at the time in some places and I thought, you know what, I'd love to just do this my way. I guess it's kind of self-indulgent really, but I'm like, imagine if I got to sort of pick and choose the client experience and design and tailor make it the way I would love to feel when I go into a clinic. And imagine if I could, like, you know, create this environment that felt like this, but it wasn't too much that, and it was super casual and inviting, but also very like boutique. And it's really fun because you get to design it however you'd like. And basically that's the way it is. You know, I'm a pretty slow injector. I take my time. Our consults are probably for clients painfully long. we go into tons of detail. We have a huge medical history, which, you know, goes on file, and lots of before photos and tons of discussion, lots of emphasis on patient education, because the more educated and the more thorough the consult is, the more successful the treatment is. And, you know, the better the consult, the better the outcome always. But yeah, so basically just wanting to do things my way, my annoyingly slow, thorough way. you know, you can't really go work for someone and treat three people and, you know, the paperwork looks really, you don't on paper look like a really impressive contractor, but, you know, but really you formed relationships with patients that could potentially last a decade. To me, that's way more valuable. So
absolutely. Well, so, slow yeah. and thorough to yeah, me exactly. sounds better than fast and rushed.
Oh, I think so, yeah, with these things.
So what does a normal day in the life of an injector look like then?
For myself, because there's a lot of sort of like the business running elements of it really. But I would, I mean, a really ideal day, if I'm really organized, I'd like to sort of, you get in early, you can have a look at your patient list, go through their histories, remind yourself who they are. If they're new people, we can prepare the doctors and things like that, so that we can have the doctor involved in their consult when, you know, just at the right time. And then basically just make the clinic look as beautiful as possible. That's my, that's our goal in the morning, is frantically running around making it look nice. and then basically I would just get into back-to-back treating, you know, pretty much all day. If I'm really lucky, I'll get a lunch break. that doesn't often happen. I often just have a little nibble in between clients. But yeah, I just happiest when I'm kind of back-to-back. I really get in flow. I reckon some of my nicest injecting work is done when I'm kind of just really engrossed in it. And yeah, basically, I don't know, I don't really know what else to say to you to make it sound like it's a bit more structured, but basically I just get in there and just see people back to back. And you know, being really busy, often running late, often not having a lunch break, you don't have to do that. That's because I can't say no. I can't not squeeze people in here and there and try and accommodate people around whatever's going on in their life and their upcoming events and stuff like that. But it doesn't have to be like that. You can have a less oh, it's my New Year's resolution this year, is to have a bit more work-life balance, and maybe, you know, like a morning tea break and a lunch break.
That would yes. be like luxury.
Yeah, that's the goal. But yeah, basically just work until I've just seen everybody. I do my best to do some client follow-up from the day before, so I really do try and touch base with people that have had an injectable filler treatment the day before, because it's the first day that, even if you're really thoroughly prepped and you're really educated as to what to expect and how to take care of your new lip filler, you know, I can sit there and say, you're going to be bruised, you're going to be swollen, you might look like a duck, there may be some asymmetry, it's just from your swelling. It's still, even though you know all of these things in your head and you've got it written in front of you on your you know, aftercare brochure, it's still nice to hear the voice of the person who did this to you the next day and go, it's all good. It's all normal. Everything you're feeling, I promise this is how it was meant to happen. And just a little bit, that unfortunately doesn't happen for everyone. If you're listening to this and you didn't get a call back, I'm really sorry. I don't want to call people at 9 o'clock at night either. But
we will be back with more of the Beauté Industry podcast after this short message from our sponsors. Are you sick of seeing industry events days after they've been hosted? Beauty Events Hub is an online hub to make sure you never miss an industry event again. Search for and advertise your beauty industry events all in one place. Head to www.beautyeventshub.com or at Beauty Events Hub on social media.
But yeah, so client follow-up and trying to get back to emails and stuff like that's usually what I spend my evenings doing, and then just do it all again the next day.
I love that. I love how you said follow-up there. So I, full disclosure, I've had my lips done, and the first time I had them done, I knew, you know, being in the industry, I knew they were going to swell. I knew that being a Fitzpatrick too, I was going to bruise, and I knew everything. Yeah. But when I woke up, I was mortified. Absolutely mortified. They were so swollen. They were so bruised. And just, I love that you've said that, you know, even if you know it, I'm still going to try and call you.
Yeah, because it's just, it's like anything. It's like, are you sure it was meant to be like this? And you can't prep yourself for how your face will look. And and also too, I always say to my girls and boys in the morning, the first thing when you wake up in the morning is when you're the most swollen anyway. So because of the way our circulation is when we're lying flat, it's really easy for the heart to pump blood up to your head when you're flat. That's why we fall flat back when we pass out, because your body's going, I need to get more oxygen to your brain ASAP. So you flatten out. That's your mechanism. But even, you know, people often wake up with puffy lips in the morning when they haven't had filler. They go, I love my lips in the morning. They're all full of fluid. Or people wake up and they go, my eyes are so puffy in the morning when I wake up. It's because of the extra fluid getting to your whole head overnight. So throw in there a bunch of, like, puncture wounds all around a very vascular area. pop in some hyaluronic acid, which loves water and loves having a good old swell at the best of times. And you're going to wake up with lips that look like you've had 2 or 3 more mils than you actually have. And it's really alarming, especially for people who are really, really interested in that natural look. I could have used my most natural filler ever. I could have done like a really, really sort of straightforward technique. I'm super gentle. We encourage icing post-treatment. You know, you can do all the right things and you can still wake up looking like a mess. And it just, that little bit of reassurance, even though you know that it's going to be okay, it really does help. So that's another thing we've got to really try and make time for in the following days, to sort of follow up those people. Because, yeah, it's really scary when you look in the mirror and you're like, what have I done this for?
Yeah, exactly. So just for those who don't know, and we need to obviously be very careful around not mentioning brands and things like that, because we don't want to promote any certain brands over others. Yeah. But for those who don't know, can we just give us a brief overview of what an anti-wrinkle injection is versus a filler, for example?
Yeah, that's something that people ask a lot, because it's hard to know. They just look at someone's face and they're like, oh, she's had things done, but they're not going to know exactly what it is that's caused that result that they do or do not like. Often people come in and point to their lips and they go, I just want some Botox here. And I'm like, no. So, yeah, really good question. So, I shouldn't say that. So anti-wrinkle toxin basically is it comes in a powder, it comes as a dry powder in a little glass vial, and we reconstitute it. So we mix it up with some normal saline, which is the same really neutral juice that you'd get in your IV drip if you ever go into hospital for anything. We mix it up with that to a perfect reconstitution that's set by the company that make the medication, so we know that the dosing is perfect every time. And basically this Basically, the anti-wrinkle toxin that we inject is very, very strategically injected into certain muscles of the face to bring about, I don't want to say paralysis because it sounds scary, but immobilization, or I like to say just putting the muscles to sleep. So the toxin is going to be used in muscles of the face to put different muscles of the face to sleep, to stop them from moving and contracting, because at the end of the day, it's that movement and contraction and expression repeatedly that's causing the little lines and wrinkles to form in the surface of the skin. So it's a bit of a myth or a misconception that toxin treatments or injectable treatments erase and vanish and take away lines and wrinkles. They actually have nothing to do with the surface of the skin. They're actually acting on the muscles beneath the skin that cause the lines in the first place, and it relaxes those, so the surface of the skin gets a chance to heal. So I like to sort of explain lines and wrinkles in the surface of the skin that we can see. You've got to think of it as a wound. So it's kind of like a superficial wound in the top layer of skin. If you had a little scratch, it's not going to take long. If you keep that area of the skin still, it's not going to take long for you to heal that little scratch away. If it was a deeper wound, it's going to take a little longer of you being nice and gentle and careful and keeping that area still and not bending and creasing the skin around the wound for it to slowly fade away. So that's kind of how I describe lines and wrinkles. So really, really young people coming in having toxin treatments to say their frown in between their eyebrows, or when they lift their eyebrows up, the lines that run along the top of you, like throughout your forehead, and they're often the pesky lines that cause those, that makeup to settle on your forehead that everybody hates. And then the lines around the eyes, for example, when you do a really big smile or you're squinting in the sun, the eyes, the lines that radiate from the corner of the eyes back to your hairline, that direction. These are sort of the most commonly treated area with the toxins. And when you think of toxin, you think of wrinkles and lines caused by movement, whereas the fillers are a completely different kettle of fish. I describe those as like a sterile injectable gel that comes in pre-filled 1 mL syringes. So, and basically we just attach the sharp pointy bit that we don't want to look at the end of that needle, and we basically administer the gel anywhere in the face that is in need of some volumizing. So when you think of, I like to describe, like when you're thinking of dermal fillers, you've sort of got to think about what's missing and what we're trying to put back. So for example, if you'd like your lips to be a little fuller, a little more plump, a little more hydrated, or if you're someone who just was never born with a very full pout, that's where you'd use a very thin sort of cerumy or honey-like consistency filler, and it would be injected into the lips themselves. And that's, you know, that's kind of how a filler would work there. If somebody had gone through dramatic weight loss, if they'd been through an illness, or if they were just a really slim, sort of quite a skinny, low body fat person, and their cheeks are a little bit hollow, or they've got like hollowing under the eyes, anything that's, you know, where volume is missing, we can replace that volume by using a filler, injecting it into that area and causing the skin to lift and inflate and to sort of mimic the structures under the skin that should have been there doing that job in the first place. So I use that sort of description to describe the different types of filler, because it's like, how come one place is selling this filler for this much, but the other filler, it's like it still says 1 mil, but why is theirs 800 and the other one was 350? Because the fillers aren't created equally. So like I said, for the lips, what we're trying to mimic by injecting lips is lip tissue. You don't want to look like you've got a bulky, bony, firm lip. You want to look like if you were to push someone's lip with your finger or give them a kiss, and it feels soft and plumpy and lovely, like a lip, like somebody was blessed and born with really nice lips. But conversely, if you're trying to create beautiful contoured structured cheekbones, or if you're trying to create a really striking sharp jawline, you want a filler that's going to mimic bone, because it's bone that we're wishing was there that we're trying to mimic. So we'd choose a filler that's a lot thicker, a lot more sort of like toothpastey or concretey when you're injecting it. But when it's injected and when it sets, it's going to look under the skin like it's a bone. As you can imagine, if you put that sort of really soft lip filler in the jawline, it's not going to do anything. You're not going to be able to see it. Conversely, if you put the bone filler into someone's lip belly, you're going to get a really rocky, bony, firm, hard, projected looking lip, which is not what we want. So if your emphasis is a natural result, we have to assess what's missing from the face and then pick a filler designed to mimic or pretend to be that. So that's basically the filler. So there's a huge spectrum of different thicknesses of fillers. They're all designed for different areas of the face. Some are sort of interchangeable and you can sort of share them around a few different areas. But the idea of relaxing muscles to stop wrinkles forming and the idea of injecting a gel into the skin to lift it up and create a different look, they're very different treatments, but they often, as you say, they get put together because people don't really realize.
Fantastic. And I love how you said that. My dad, and I'm sure it's men, bless them, but often say, oh, you know, you've got all these anti-wrinkle injections in your lips, and you're like, that's not correct.
Exactly.
You're not talking terminology here.
Well, they're pointing to like their people often point to the line between the end of their nostril and the corner of their mouth, and they say, maybe you're hot, and they're like, I just want a Botox's, and I'm like, you'd look like you had a stroke.
Yeah.
A muscle relaxant in that area, you don't want me to do that, please. That's exactly. When you have to be guided by the expert and not just be guided by the patient.
As I mentioned before, I have been treated with injectables, and I've had my lips done twice now. Obviously both with filler. The first time was really, as I said, I woke up so swollen and bruised, and it was just a nightmare for me. They didn't go down for about 4 weeks, and I was of course, selfies to my friends going, is this normal? Because I was the baby of the group who hadn't had anything. And they're replying back in just the most diplomatic way, saying, mine didn't look like that, but... And then, obviously, I had them done a second time about a year later by an incredible injector, and I had no swelling. My partner had no idea that I had them done. And so there are obviously people in the industry who are a little bit better at it than others. What, in your experience and your opinion, does it take to be an amazing injector over an average injector?
Well, experience has a lot to do with it. Definitely, I mean, bruising is a really funny one. Bruising, I always use my beautiful best friend as an example here. Sorry, babe, if you listen to this. But she's a really great example of the variables of the human body and how sometimes things are just so out of our hands. So with her, when we were kind of, you know, she had quite petite lips to begin with. And the goal was to just build her lips really gradually over time up to, you know, a place where, like, a size she was happy with. And so I use her as an example because for a good 2 years there, I reckon I used the exact same needle size, the same product, the same technique, because she liked that technique, because she liked the shape it gave her and the definition and the bow and the balance, and she was really, really happy with that style. So we very, very strictly stuck to that thing. And so I'm doing everything the same. And then obviously she gets an ice pack immediately after treatment. Not every injector does that, and there's evidence for and against, but I just choose to 20 minutes on, 20 minutes off, just to help the initial swelling and maybe minimize, not prevent but minimize bruising. And she would sometimes be black and blue, and I mean, everyone goes, if I get bruising I can pop makeup on it, and I'm like, if you're a professional makeup artist and you've got that blue green pink green concealer color balancey jargon going on, which is beyond my comprehension, I don't understand. Maybe if you can do that stuff, yes, but sometimes if it's a black mark on your face, it's really, really not that easy to cover. So, you know, she would sometimes she'd be black and blue, and it would literally look like she'd put patchy black lipstick on her lips, and she'd even have bruises around the mouth. And that's something a lot of people don't expect, is sort of across like your upper lip area where your left little mo might grow, that can be quite bruised too. And that's really hard to hide, because then it's a job for concealer. If it's in the lips, we always say, if it's inside the lip line, happy days, because a good bold lippy and you'll get away with it. But when it comes to around the mouth, it's a job for concealer, and it can be a lot harder, especially for women who aren't in the habit of wearing a really full face of makeup during the day. And then other times I do my best friend's lips, and there would not be a mark on her. And I mean, nothing, like not an entry point, nothing on the inside of her lip, in the mucosa, in the wet part of the lip, not a mark. And I'm like, think, what did you do differently? Was it a wine? Was it an aspirin? Was it a Nurofen? Is your period due? Is your period finished? Are you dehydrated? Are you too hydrated? Did you drink too much water? Like, what, you know, try and think what you did differently. And we just couldn't come up with it. So it's just that varied. Even if all the variables are, you know, all your stars align, everything that you can control, you've controlled. You've not had an aspirin in the last 72 hours. You've not had a Nurofen. You've not had wine. You've not, you know, you do everything you can, and you can still be black and blue. And then I get other girls that come in who I've looked after for years, and they go, look, Ames, not going to lie, I had 3 or 4 wines last night. It is what it is. And I'm like, okay, cool. I'm happy to go ahead, but you're sort of accepting that you're probably going to be pretty bruised. And for whatever reason, they get away with it, and they haven't got any bruising at all. So it sort of isn't always an injector skill. It can just be completely varied by the person themselves. It could be they're on a medication that they forgot they're on that makes you prone to bruising. Some people are just mega prone and others aren't. So it can vary treatment to treatment, even with the same person, with the same size needle and the same technique. So that's my little anecdotal proof that, I'm not a butcher. I'm not being a savage. If you bruise, it's not because I was rushing or being rough. It's literally just how it goes. But yeah, sorry to digress again. But the difference between a really good injector to me is consultation, and it's in the education of the patient and how much you care to make sure they understand about what's really happening. Every single time I get a new, and it's kind of like for business owners and other injectors out there trying to establish a client base, when somebody comes to me who's had injections before, if they've had, say they're coming to me for lip filler, I'm just using lip filler because it's a super, super common procedure. If someone comes to me to get their lips done and obviously on my form, which is ridiculously long, sorry guys, they say that they've had it. Yes, I had it done 2 years ago and I had it done 18 months ago and then I had it done 3 months ago. I want to know quite a bit about that, but most importantly, why, if you've had it done before, what brings you here? What did you not like about it? What went wrong? Can you tell me about your experience and how you found the results of those? And if somebody says to you, oh, it was, you know, the results were really good, but I had a horrible, horrible time because I had a bruise. She was really bad. And I'm like, oh, another injector, bless her, might have done the best injecting job in her life. She might have been gentle. Her technique was good. The shape was nice. But she didn't explain to the client properly that she can be bruised. So the client thinks that's an adverse event. And she thinks that injector's been rough or done something wrong, when actually it's just a normal part of the procedure and it's not a reflection on how good she is. So usually when someone comes to me from another injector, there's going to be a complaint or something they've disliked, and 9 times out of 10 it's just a fail in the consult, and that's all. Somebody goes, oh my god, it was horrible, I had a really, really bad time. I'm like, oh my goodness, what happened? I got a cold sore. And I'm like, well, that can happen.
Normal.
That's absolutely something that can happen. At our clinic, we have a policy of every single person, if they've had a cold sore even one time in their life, you know, if you were two years old, you've got to take antiviral, you know, oral tablets to prevent a cold sore outbreak, which can be triggered from the trauma of the needles going in your lips. But do you see what I mean? So this injector, I'm feeling this girl's lips and they're perfect. She's done a lovely job. It's wearing away symmetrically, so she's used a good product. This poor injector's had no reason to lose this client other than perhaps for one reason or another, she just failed to sort of mention that part of it and just wasn't probably as thorough as she should have been. I think the more they understand about the outcomes, it builds relationships with the client anyway, but you know, if you can really manage their expectations, if you can promise realistic outcomes, it's all in the consult, really. I mean, it's the technique. You can inject for 10 years and then somebody can come along and learn for 6 months and be better than you. The technique you can teach and you can learn and you can hone. You can't teach personality and rapport building, and you can't skimp on a consult. Even if you're pressed for time, run late rather than run into trouble because you've left something important out, because either something will go wrong or you'll never see that person again, or both. So yeah, that's about it. Yeah. I think that's probably the most important thing.
Amazing. When you're treating, obviously there is a very subtle line between overdone and natural. And I'm sure there would be a lot of clients, as you're saying there, you know, clients coming from injector to injector, and sometimes in tomorrow's injectable clinic I might say, okay, no more, client, this is enough. And then she says, okay, well, stuff you tomorrow, I'm going to go see Amy. And she comes to you and then wants some more. How do you treat carefully as to not cross that line?
It is a fine line, and it really does come down to perspective, I think, and your opinion and your aesthetic, really. I mean, it's like if you go to it's a good question, actually, because it's a real contentious issue of debate and, like, you know, discussion and gossip in the industry, I guess. But it's like if I went to my hairdresser and I'm like, hey, guess what, I really want to bleach my whole hair blonde today, being a brunette, and I want blue hair as well. I want a blue and blonde do today, now, here. And she'd be like, okay, here's why I don't want to do that. That's not safe. That's really extreme. It's going to damage your hair. And I don't like that look. I think it would look nicer if you did a pretty lovely set of foils. And I'd be like, cool, that's your aesthetic. I don't actually like your hair. Can you? I want my hair like this now, and I'm prepared to pay for it. And if you don't do it, I'll get someone else to do it. And they might burn my hair, and they might break, make it break, and they might burn my head, and I'll have a reaction to the dye. So you can do it safely for my money, or I'm going to go somewhere else and get botched and be in a really bad position. So that hairdresser can go, nah, your hair is my business card. I don't want you walking around with crazy blue hair going, this lady did my hair. I don't want people walking around knowing that that's my work. Or you can say, look, it's not personally how I'd like my own lips to be. My personal opinion is this. I prefer this natural look because I do. I do love. And the older I get, the more I favor natural beauty 100 times out of 100 if I can. But I have to admit there are the odd times when a girl with very big eyes, very big full cheeks, or a really, really, really big broad long chin, or a really large defined square set jaw will come to me and say, look, I'm really just in need of balancing my features overall. I've had my lips done. I'm happy with them. When they're swollen, I feel amazing. When they're swollen, I feel more in proportion. And I'd say, look, okay, for you, in your case, in this individual time, I totally get what you're saying and I agree. It's all about proportion and symmetry and harmony with the rest of your features. And in her case, yeah, I'll indulge her and we can do quite full lips if that's what she's after. If I had my own personal choice and my own aesthetic, I do love the natural look. I always say to my ladies, my goal for your whole face is for people to look at you and be like, oh, this bitch just born like this. How about it? You know, half your luck. Wonder what her mum looks like. Wonder what her dad looks like. You know, she's probably one of those people with a beautiful grandmother, you know. I'd love people to just look and think that was just a feature that belongs in your face. To me, that's the job well done. And I've got clients who've been having treatment for years and years and years, and their own partners have no, like you said, with your partner, you know, they don't really notice as such because it just looks so organic to your face. And that's a massive, you know, that's a massive testament to your injector, and that's the goal. But yeah, it's obviously 2016 was the year of the Kylie Jenner transformation and $1 billion worth of lip kit sales off the back of it. And, you know, trends will come and go. But I think it's case by case. I think probably maybe 15 or 20% of my lip clients want a really, really full look that I personally wouldn't wear myself. And the rest, yeah, the rest hopefully, thankfully are kind of happy to be guided by me. But I mean, I really try not, talk somebody out of it if they wanted to look ridiculous. And as I said, that's my business card. So if they've really gone too far, especially if they've been to, like you mentioned, multiple injectors, it's a bit of a red flag. It may mean that they've been told no in other places. It may mean that there's sort of, you know, underlying sort of maybe psychological things going on about why they just think that their life will be better if they have these huge lips and that they're just pursuing it all around Victoria, all different injectors. But but yeah, I guess the short answer is it's a case-by-case thing. It's a taste thing. It's an age thing. It's got to be appropriate to your face. And at the end of the day, this stuff doesn't last forever. So if I was a surgeon and people were saying, I'm 19 and I want these whopping great breast implants, like a cup. That's very different because those implants are going to be in there for a really long time. So that's different. But yeah, I guess it's just case by case. Yeah.
Yeah, fantastic. Yeah. Wise advice there. And I want to get some more of your advice. We have a lot of business owners who listen to the podcast. What is your advice to them if they are wanting to hire an injector as a contractor for a day or two a week and come into their business and treat?
If they've got a business that's not necessarily in that field, so they don't have other injectors in the clinic or doctors or anything, and they're just looking to add to their treatment menu the injectables that nurse can provide, as a business owner, my priority would be to sit down with them and have a really frank conversation about your expectations in terms of consistently being available on the same day each week or fortnight. The biggest thing, when I see a lot of clients that come in and they go, oh, I had a really great injector, but she kept piss fighting around. One minute she was at this place, the next she was at that. I used to go to this one place that I go, but, you know, every other time she would cancel or she would change the days. The day she was working no longer suited me. There can be, with contracting, there can be a lot of chopping and changing. And clients like to rely on them being there on the same day and having consistent availability, because things like the toxin treatment, you want that topped up every 3 months, really. You want your fillers sort of topped up every sort of 4 to 6 months if you're having little sort of superficial things here and there. The biggest thing as a business owner for me to take on a contractor, if I didn't have other nurses there, would be, can you commit to these days and can you sign this contract to say that you will be here, rain, hail or shine? Because you can see from the contractor's perspective, if there's no retainer and you've got a client booked for them at 9 o'clock in the morning and a client booked for them at 5 o'clock at night, she doesn't really, he doesn't really want to spend their entire day twiddling their thumbs in your clinic unless you're prepared to pay a retainer. And if you're in a position to do that, that's a fantastic way to, one, secure your injector and to make them happy and to get them to come to work with a great attitude, really positive attitude, and stick around. Sometimes it really, I mean, when I was contracting and I didn't have I had like three clients to my name, I used to come in and just sit at the front desk and just sit there and look awesome and put a lot of effort into my appearance and just sit there. And you would not believe how many times that other staff would be like, oh, well, if you've ever thought about that, that's what she does. And you can just engage in conversations like that. And I look quite, I look pretty natural myself. You know, the things that I've had done, and people go, oh, but you don't look like you've had done. And I'm like, well, that's because, you know, if it's done well, it shouldn't be obvious. And you can just sort of spark the conversation from there. But yeah, if I was a business owner, it's the availability and the reliability, the consistent, being able to commit to consistent days. You need to have a pretty rock solid arrangement in terms of who's getting what percentage of what. So a lot of places have, like I said, a retainer and then a percentage of their profit. So some places they, so whatever the nurse makes for the day, a percentage of that profit goes back to the owner. Solidify agreements about pay and percentages and things like that. I've heard of things turning really nasty when, the lines get blurred. There's cash payments here and there that aren't cleared, or the nurse sometimes comes in and has her own FPOS machine and she puts some payments through that and some payments through the clinic one. And
very confusing.
It can get a little bit messy and sort of, and sometimes we're talking about thousands and thousands of dollars. So it's a big deal and it really does matter. The other thing a business owner should look for in a contract injector would be being proactive in marketing themselves. If your staff some of your staff's time is going to be used taking their bookings and things like that. You really want a lot of those leads and those new clients to be coming in from what the injector has generated themselves through whatever social media and whatever they want to do online. But it's kind of tricky because you get a contractor and then it's like, well, nobody knows that they're here, so we'll market it. But also you've got to be proactive as well in putting yourself out there and, obviously just that kind of side of it as well. Because some injectors like rock up with a full client base themselves and they're just looking for somewhere to work to bring all their ladies, and they're fantastic. But at the same time, they can just pack up and leave and their list will go with them. So if you've had to put in the man hours to generate clients for this injector, and then they turn around after 6 or 12 months and go bye and take all of these leads with them, and then you get a new injector and who has to start from scratch again, that can be really hard too. So I guess it's the relationship that you have and the contract and the agreement that you have that you're both really happy with. There's a lot to it, isn't there? I didn't realize how
it's a big partnership, isn't it?
Especially when it's your baby, your business, and you don't want to do anything detrimental.
Amazing. So speaking about marketing and kind of generating your own business, can you direct everyone? I'm sure they're going to want to follow you and your businesses. What are your social media handles, website, all of the kind of details that we would want to send somebody to?
So on Instagram, I'm Cosmetic Nurse Amy. It's really, really original. and actually the clinic's got a really, really creative, unique name too. It's just Eltham Cosmetic Clinic. So really, really went out on a limb there. It's just at Eltham Cosmetic Clinic, the clinic itself with all our other sort of laser and skin procedures that we do. And then my own personal one. It's pretty boring. I'm not very good at maintaining my own one. But
easily remembered.
Exactly. You can't forget it. And same with Facebook. I'm Cosmetic Nurse Amy on Facebook, and the Eltham Cosmetic Clinic has their own business page as well. We've got a really fantastic website that's not far off being ready, with a really extensive FAQ section that you're going to love, because it's all of those silly, annoying, embarrassing, obvious questions you don't want to ask about every single injectable procedure. So it's taken a really long time to put that content together, so I really hope everybody likes it.
Go there and have a read once it's live.
Yeah, exactly. Please.
Amazing. Well, I'd really love to thank you today. I know you were in the middle of clients and you've still rushed out and managed to have this conversation on the podcast. So I really, really appreciate all of your time and all of your advice.
You're fantastic. Welcome. Thank you so much. It's been really fun.
I so hope you enjoyed the conversation with Amy today. I could certainly listen to everything she says, as she spares no details and has provided me with so much insight into the world of injecting. There is lots more conversation happening in our Facebook group, Beauté Industry Community, so do feel free to join if you want to be on the inside. On another note, our Beauté Brunch Gold Coast event is happening on Sunday the 10th of March at the QT. And for those of you who do live in the southeast of Queensland or north of New South Wales, tickets are still available via the website, and I so hope to see you there. Until next time, stay connected.